Did you hear the one about the multi-generational family of 50 rats living in a beautiful home in Fort Myers? Patrick Gibson has, because he's the one who evicted them. Patrick is a biologist and owner of Professional Wildlife Removal of Cape Coral, and boy, does he have stories to tell. And we're going to hear a few of them on the Royal Palmcast beginning right now.
You're listening to The Royal Palmcast, the show about all things real estate. From the production studios of the Royal Palm Coast Realtor Association in Fort Myers, Florida, here's your host, Jim Sandville.
Welcome to the Royal Palmcast. I am indeed your host, Jim Sandville. I'm coming to you from the studios of the Royal Palm Coast Realtor Association in beautiful, sunny Fort Myers, Florida. I'm here today with Jerry Johnson. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, Jim. I'm here too.
You doing okay?
I am. Are you doing okay?
I'm doing fantastic.
I just want to make sure. I want to make sure you're happy.
I'm very happy. Thank you for worrying about that. Most people don't care how happy I am, but
Jim.
I know you are. You're a caring guy, Jerry.
I am.
Caring guy. Enough about that. But I want to let you folks know that this is the show where we talk about real estate. We talk about every aspect of it. If you're a realtor, if you're a home buyer, home seller, home owner, we're going to talk about stuff that will be of interest to you, we believe, and today is no exception. In fact, today we're really going to have a fun show because we've got an interesting guy who is in the studio with us today. His name is Patrick Gibson. Patrick is the owner of Professional Wildlife Removal in the Cape Coral, Fort Myers area of Southwest Florida. Patrick serves all of Southwest Florida, removing and relocating unwanted critters from homes and businesses throughout the area. Patrick has served more than 4,000 clients, including homeowners, all major property management companies in the area, and businesses such as Walmart, Home Depot, Southwest Florida International Airport, and many real estate agencies from Naples to Port Charlotte. Welcome to the Royal Palmcast, Patrick.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
I am thrilled to have you. Patrick was in the studio with us before, and perhaps you have listened to that episode and learned a little bit about what he does. He is a very busy guy. He removes, obviously, unwanted critters from homes and businesses, and sometimes they're alive, sometimes they're dead. But he's the guy who gets the call when there's something going bump in the night in your attic. Now, the last time you were on, Patrick, as I recall, I didn't touch on one thing I wanted to check with you about, and that's gators. Do you handle gators?
I do not handle live gators. That's going to be the FWC. If anybody has a gator issue there, they do that service for free. They do have criteria on that, though. It's not if you see any gator, they come take care of it. If you have a gator that is 6 feet or larger, you know, in your estimation, and it seems aggressive, if those two criteria are met, they will send somebody out. It's a free service. Their trappers will take that out of there for you, whether it's in a swimming pool. Well, swimming pool will come get no matter what. But if it's in a water body near your home, behind your home, in your community, they'll take care of that for you, usually within 24 hours.
They don't get into attics too much, huh?
No, usually not. Usually not.
So you said 6 feet or more?
6 feet or larger, correct.
So if you get a 5.5-footer, you're on your own, right?
Well, if it looks like 6 feet, then it's 6 feet, right?
Exactly. Well, metric. It's a conversion from the metric to the English system.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. So one thing I want to get out of you today, and I know you've got 100 stories, but I've asked you to put a little thought into some of your best stories about wildlife removal, and you have come prepared to do that today. What would you like to share with us? What interesting has ever happened to you, Patrick?
Okay. Well, a couple things over the last decade plus. Let's start with the alligator theme, since we ended on that.
Yeah.
So I said I don't do live alligators, which I don't. That's its own dedicated thing where guys just do that, but dead anything, alligators included, is a thing. So I will tell you about a story from, it would have been 2013. Got a phone call from a gentleman who said that he lives on the water, but he doesn't have a seawall. He has an embankment, and it appeared to him that there was a gator that was dead, half in and half out of the water. So the head to the midsection was out of the water. The rest of it, including the tail, was in the water. Seemed to be large. Pretty sure it was dead. Wasn't 100% sure, so he wanted to find out.
He didn't want
to
poke it, huh?
So he didn't want to get close. Nobody else wanted to do either.
Don't poke the gator, we say here in Florida.
Stay away from the gator. So I went out to the house, and I pulled into his driveway, and it was a fairly large property. But as soon as I opened the door to get out, it smelled like 1,000 rotting fish. So at that point, I knew there was no possibility this was alive. This is clearly a dead animal, and it had been decomposing probably for at least 3 or 4 days.
Like a parrot on Monty Python sketches. Yeah,
exactly. So that was going to the back and kind of seeing what was there. It was a good size. I'd probably put the guy at about 300 pounds, be about right. It was a good size gator. So the guy's first question was, "Is it alive?" I said, no, that smell that we're smelling, that definitely tells us it's not. And then the 5,000 maggots pouring off of it also is a good indicator that it's definitely not alive. So he said, oh, okay, well, that's cool. Now what? Now what do we do? I said, well, it's pretty big. So the next part of this, you're probably not going to want to witness. And at this point, the neighbors were out because, you know, it was the guy was here that was going to deal with the gator. So let's go see what the guy's going to do.
Sure.
So the neighbors are all out, and everybody's talking, and
cameras rolling.
Yeah, everybody got their phones out, and they're like, "Okay, well, are you gonna hook a chain or something up to it and pull it out of there? What are you gonna do?" I said, "No, that's what we're gonna do is we're gonna cut it into small pieces, bag it up, and then we're gonna remove it that way." And that was pretty much the point where everybody decided they were going back in the house when the chainsaw came out. There's no way to do this where it looks pretty. It's just one of those things that just doesn't look pretty.
Let the listeners know that Jim and I are recoiling in horror at the visual of that.
This is my recurring nightmare of chainsaw gators.
Exactly. So we had to make the big gator into small gator pieces, and then we're able to take him out. And so that's how he got removed out of there. So that was that one.
I thought you were going to say you just took the pieces and threw them out for the fish to eat.
No, we tried to take it out. The decomposition was just, it was so bad.
Yeah.
I wear a pretty good respirator that blocks just about everything out. It was to the point where I felt, and I don't have really much of a gag reflex for, again, with what I do and whatnot, but when I did have to take the mask off just from overheating a little bit, it was... You could definitely tell it was a gag reflex waiting to happen on anybody.
Well,
it was rough.
I was one of the people in a crowd with my cell phone rolling, and that might have been my cologne you smelled.
Could have been.
I don't know for sure.
So yeah, so there's unfortunate gross things like that happen, but there's also no service for that. There's not a, you know, the first thing people think of when that happens is, well, you know, I'll call the county or I'll call the city. Well, they don't do anything like that. They'll pretty much tell you either on your own, figure it out, or let nature take its course and, you know, come let the predators come get it, or call somebody. And since most people aren't going to wait for a full decomposition of something that large, they call somebody.
That'll kill your property values.
Nobody likes that. That was not a fun one.
Wow. What else you got?
Okay, so we'll only go with one more dead thing. I've got a million dead stories, but we'll just do one more because this one's kind of funny. It's funny, kinda. So I got another phone call from a gentleman. This was just a few years ago, and he said, "I think there's a dead dog in my canal."
Oh dear!
And it, with the way the current is, it keeps. He's like, "I keep pushing it away with a stick, hoping the current would take it," and he said it keeps ending up right back in front of my dock. And he said, you know, the smell is really strong, and he's like, "I'm not sure if it's one of my neighbors or what's going on with it." And so I said, "Oh, well, let me come out and let me take a look, and, you know, worst case scenario, we'll get it out of the water, maybe we'll ID it, if there's a collar or something on, we'll figure it out." So I get there, and, you know, it was an older guy, and it looked like a dog to him, but as soon as I saw it, it was clearly a pig. Not a dog.
No.
It was definitely a pig. It was just a wild pig.
Was it dead?
It was dead. It was on its back floating and, you know, stomach facing up, and, again, lots of maggots involved and lots of smells. Ooh. And the guy wasn't kidding. As soon as I got there, he literally had this paint pole. Those paint poles that can extend really far.
Yeah.
And I could see him on his dock pushing it out as far as that pole would take it. And then I'm watching that. And then, you know, hey, you know, it's Patrick. Hey, I'm here. And as he's walking over to me, and he's talking to me for a few minutes, and kid you not, I keep looking over at it, and it just keeps coming right back to the same spot at his dock. He just could not get this thing to go away. He's like, listen, I've been trying this thing all day. I keep trying to push it away. It won't go away. He's like, can you help me just figure out if it's a dog and if it's a neighbor's dog? I'm like, listen, it's definitely not a neighbor's dog. It's definitely just a wild pig. And it, you know, something happened to it. It fell into the water, possibly drowned, possibly got into a fight. Something happened to it. You know, it, not a big deal. And so he was glad that it wasn't a, someone's pet. And we between the both of us, it was tricky to get that thing out of the water because it was a tough get. But we were able to get it out of the water, bag it up, and then kind of take that one out of there.
You didn't have to take the chainsaw to that one.
No chainsaws on that one. Wow. That was just the right size to just, we triple bagged that thing up and took it out of there.
how big did you say it was?
Well, that wasn't too bad. That was pretty small, still juvenile. I'd probably put that one about 40 pounds, maybe 50 pounds. Reasonable. Okay. Manageable.
Nothing like the gator. I thought you were going to say it was a live manatee.
I was wondering if you're going for manatee.
Yeah. Wow. Interesting. Interesting.
No. So that actually was a dead one. Yeah.
That's a good story. Now, what else? What else has happened?
So we'll leave the dead ones. We'll leave the rest of the story for another
peace.
Time.
Yes.
Exactly. So I got a phone call once from a lady who's like, outside my window at night, in the middle of the night, I keep hearing this really strange noise. And I said, oh, okay. I'm like, can you describe it? What's it sound like? Is it, you know, I'm thinking, first thing is, you know, frog. Is it some kind of frog type noise? She's like, no, I don't think it's a frog. It's just nothing I've ever heard before. She's like, I even recorded it. I'll send you over a copy. I'm like, oh, okay, well, I'll listen. So I listened to it, and I didn't recognize it either. I was like, okay, this is interesting. I have no idea what it is. So I go out there, and I'm inspecting around the house. Nothing looked out of the ordinary, but she had decent-sized window sills on the outside. So I could see that something was there, left a little evidence behind. Kind of looked like frog a little bit, kind of looked like something I hadn't seen before, but it was something. So I said, okay. Not something you're going to want to trap. It's most likely, because I don't know what it is, we don't know what to put it in for a bait to attract it. So I said, let's put a glue trap in place. So if it's something of this size, which I think it is, it'll stick to the glue trap. We'll figure it out. So I set the glue trap up, and then she called me the next morning, and she said, okay, I still don't know what it is, but it's on your glue trap. And I said, oh, okay, well, let me come on out, and I'll check it out. So I get out there. I did not recognize what it was.
Really?
Right off the bat. And I said, oh, okay, this is something interesting. I'm going to have to look this up. I don't even know what it is.
Wow.
It ended up being an exotic lizard. Okay, it was called a tegu lizard, an Argentinian tegu lizard, which we identified. Definitely not native.
Probably traveling without papers.
Definitely not supposed to be here.
Mm.
So it was still alive. So I said, oh, okay, well, this might, you know, after I looked it up and saw that, you know, not harmful at all, I said, oh, okay, well, I may want to just keep this as a pet. This might be an interesting, fun one to take back to my two young girls who, you know, might be interested in this.
Mm-hmm.
So we set a dry tank up for it and put it in there. It was a very colorful, it was a fun type lizard. It was pretty cool. And we kept it. So the point of that type of story is that we have things that nobody knows that are out there sometimes, lots of invasive-y type things that don't make the news. But in certain situations, they make an appearance, and we're like, okay, all right, that's now been introduced to our area. Yeah. And again, this was several years back. Now, looking up, doing some show prep prior to coming here, looking up tegus, they're starting to turn into an issue in our area. So it's something that is starting to take hold. We're the perfect habitat for it. And it just takes a male and a female in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you have a population.
How about iguanas? Have you dealt with those?
On occasion. Iguanas are very difficult to capture. They're one of the harder ones. They generally don't like to go into a trap. When you're trapping for something like that, it's usually going to be a large trap. Okay, you don't want a trap that's its size. You need something super size. Okay?
Mm. They can be very big.
Be very big. We've seen them. I think we measured one out once, close to 6 feet. I mean, they can get to be super size.
I've seen them.
So you need the right size trap for it. So they're very difficult to trap. They can, you know, they're herbivore, so they're going to be looking usually for a lot of fruits. They love bananas. Bananas are the big thing. But if they had a choice of going in your trap for bananas, or bananas that are sitting on a tree, you lose that battle every time. So they're very cautious creatures. Not uncatchable, but they're very, very, very difficult. Mm. They were the ones where the FWC, unfortunately, a couple years ago said, hey, if you guys see any iguanas, it's okay to go ahead and shoot them. Okay, which is, you don't want to be telling the general public to be shooting anything ever.
In city limits, particularly.
Yes, because you're... When you say that, that means a lot of things to a lot of different people. Some people have a little more common sense, and they assume you're talking about a pellet gun, okay? Which is, for the most part, you can get away with that. City limits, get away with that. To some people, shooting does not mean that. You know, that means they're pulling out an AR, they're pulling out a handgun.
Really?
And they're shooting bullets.
You've heard of stories of like
this. Oh, absolutely.
This.
Absolutely. So when you feel like you're getting the okay from a government agency to shoot... Some people take you up on that. Now, again, shooting is, and you can, I mean, you can shoot these guys, but it's not recommended. There's far, far easier ways to deal with it, and you don't want to be missing your target. These are guys that can move lightning fast. I don't know if people have seen just how quickly they move. If you startle one, it can get away from your line of sight very quickly, because they can move very quickly.
You're always going to run away from people,
always
going
to scamper away, grease lightning.
They're not going to attack us.
Not going to attack, for the most part. You know, they again, they're in, a monitor lizard is different, okay, whereas they would, okay? They would attack a person, they would attack kids, they would attack pets. For the most part, iguana is going to run away from just about everybody, and amazing swimmers. You usually see them basking in the sun at a seawall on a dock. You start them, they're in the water, and it's shocking how well they swim. Mm. They swim more like a fish than they do anything else. Mm. So they're pretty amazing. So with those, again, big recommendation there is don't shoot anything too easy to miss, too easy to ricochet, too easy to overshoot into your neighbor's area. Lots of bad things happening. Best tip there is something called a motion activated water jet. Okay. So if they're coming on your property, can't be caught. A lot of times they can't be captured. It's very hard to, the grease lightning type of movement. So try to throw a net, not getting them. But a motion detector water jet, what that'll do when you have a guy that is on your property, you can't get him off. This is kind of like a motion detected light. It breaks the invisible beam, something, and it turns your light on. Well, this turns a water jet on that's attached to your hose, which is attached to a faucet, which is running at a pretty good clip. And its goal is to blast out water very hard, very fast, 30 feet. At 180 degree angle. So if your guy's breaching anywhere within 30 feet at 180 degrees, this is machine gun fire right in the face with whatever the animal is. So if it's something you cannot get off your property, river otters, raccoons where you have a pool cage, don't have a pool cage, and they like to go in your pool all the time, you just can't seem to, you can trap them, but you can trap them forever and you can't stop it. Water jets come in super handy for repelling anything you can't or don't want to trap or don't want to pay for trapping. Comes in super handy. So always a big recommendation.
Wow. Can you imagine Jerry Patrick's little girls growing up? Tell us a story, Daddy. So he tuck him into bed. And if they were to say that to you back in the day, what story might you have told them? No, not really. Tell me a wildlife story.
Well, we would do better than that. So a lot of times... there'd be situations where juveniles got abandoned, like juvenile raccoons. Oh. So mom raccoon has some kits, group of kits. She doesn't come back. She's out getting resources. She gets killed. It happens. Run over, predator, things happen. Kits are left behind. So they got to see firsthand when I would bring those home first. Everybody get them, look at them. Not too much handling on that. And then they would generally go to Crow, the wildlife rehabilitator, the next day. We've done that with kittens that got left behind in certain spots. Juvenile armadillos, which are absolutely adorable, like little dinosaurs. Mm. Lots of juvenile things. So they got up close and personal with lots of cool juvenile things growing up.
Yeah.
To the point where they're, they were used to that.
By the way, do you ever need to trap feral dogs or cats?
No. Never. No, that's going to be animal control, animal services.
Oh, okay.
Again, our... fearless government services that don't do a whole lot out there.
Well,
that's the one thing they do, and I'm glad that they do it when they do it. I know the funding for that stuff's not great, so sometimes it's, hey, we keep hearing this dog barking, or dog's running through the neighborhood, and it can take them a while to get there. They do eventually get to it. It's a little slow sometimes, but they're the only ones authorized for stuff like that.
Yeah, and by the way, you had mentioned FWC earlier. That's the Florida Wildlife Commission?
Correct.
Commission, okay, yeah. If you're listening from someplace else and are not familiar. We are going to take a very quick break here, but I am anxious to get back from it so I can hear more stories from our guest, Patrick Gibson. We'll be right back after this brief message.
Hi, this is Sandra Aguilar, President of the Women's Council of Realtors Cape Coral Fort Myers, and you are listening to the Royal Palmcast.
Hi, this is Justin Thibault of LSI Companies, and you're listening to the Royal Palmcast.
Hi, I'm Molly Schweers, and you're listening to the Royal Palmcast.
You buy insurance for your car and for your home. Why not for your business? Hi, I'm Kevin Besser, your Director of Public Policy. RPAC is the political arm of the Realtor Association, advocating for realtors and issues important for homeowners. In other words, insurance for your business. We need your help and support to protect your business and the rights of property owners. All it takes is $20 to insure your business and to protect the rights of homeowners. For more information or how to invest, please contact me at kevin@rpcra.org.
Education? You need it? We've got it. I'm Angela Foster, Director of Education at Royal Palm Coast Realtor Association. If you're a realtor in Southwest Florida, the Royal Palm Coast Realtor Association has the classes, courses, workshops, and webinars you need to stay at the top of your game and keep your license current. Looking to bill your continuing education hours? We offer core law and code of ethics classes to fulfill your CE requirement, along with many other courses to fulfill your requirements for specialty credits. Want to learn the ins and outs of the specific market you serve? Our A-Series provides an in-depth look at Cape Coral and Fort Myers with all the right experts to fill you in. Our Contract Series is a 5-session course on listing agreements, FAR bar contracts, timelines, and more. It doesn't end there. Classes like how to stay out of real estate jail, negotiating skills, listing tips, conflict resolution, and many more keep realtors in Lee County up to speed with the latest information. Many of our classes are free to members and some are open to non-members. If you're a real estate professional who's interested in working in the Southwest Florida market, we've got you covered. For more information, visit our website at rpcra.org or email education@rpcra.org.
Welcome back to the Royal Palmcast. I'm Jim Sandville along with Jerry Johnson, and our guest today is Patrick Gibson. He is a professional wildlife remover here in Southwest Florida, and Patrick has seen it all. So today he's giving us some of his favorite, most memorable stories of wildlife trapping, removing, whether they're dead or alive, he has done it. But before we get back into your next juicy story here, Patrick, one thing I meant to ask you, do you need a license to do what you do? Do you have to be certified by any agency?
You do not. This is one of the few areas where, for the most part of what I do, you don't. Anytime you do anything with rats, for example, though, you do. But outside of that, if you're trapping possums or raccoons, it's a non-light for now. I mean, government, I'm sure there's always going to be regulations they make up at some point.
Yeah.
But for the moment, there's no regulations on that at all. And we're hoping to keep it that way. You know, less red tape on things, the better, and things get done more efficiently. So, so far,
but,
so good.
But you certainly have the background for it your expertise in biology.
Exactly. So. Correct.
All right. So let's jump back into another story here. Do you have any more left, or have we exhausted all of your wildlife stories?
No. We got plenty.
There's more? So all right.
We got a few more here. Okay. So we'll do a couple of quick ones. Got a phone call from a condo complex in Port Charlotte. In Punta Gorda. And they said that they lived on the third or the fourth story, one of those. And there was an Eastern Diamondback rattlesnake in front of their door. And I said, oh, do you know it's an Eastern Diamondback, or does it just look like a big snake? I'm like, no, it's an Eastern Diamondback, and I've got a photo. Let me text it to you. So they text me the photo, and lo and behold, Eastern Diamondback.
Are they native here?
They are. That's one of our four venomous snakes, of which we'll get into snakes in a bit. So when you see something like that, something that has the ability to kill somebody or something, you want to make sure that's dealt with, and it's dealt with immediately. So definitely confirmed, Eastern Diamondback. So got the address, got out to the site, and it was a condo complex, and let's just say there was the crowd size, maybe 30 people. There was a crowd. Everybody's watching every move it's making. So I got my stuff out, and as soon as I started bringing stuff out, the crowd starts cheering. I mean, I had the whole audience going here. So I had the Eastern Diamondback. It had moved down some steps, and the crowd was far enough back. Nobody was in any type of danger. But I had a snake grabber, which is a nice professional tool. It's kind of like those extensions you see people use where they have a hard time getting things off a shelf, mm-hmm. and it's got a handle on it with a little grasper end. It's kind of like that, but it's heavy duty for snakes. So if you've got something big and strong, it can't just break out of it. You got the snake in that, you're good. So it's not a hook, it actually grabs the snake. So that's what I've got at that point. Eastern Diamondbacks have very good reflexes, and you want to make sure when you're making your grab, you're grabbing it as close to the head as you can. You don't want to grab the head itself. You want to be kind of just under the head. You don't want to be too far away from it. You don't want him to have the ability to strike once you've got him under control. Because they can use their body like one big muscle. So you grab the snake near the tail, it can still strike your hand, your arm, without batting an eyelash. So you want to know your position and wear the right materials. I wear heavy-duty welder gloves when I'm doing things like that, and I tend to throw some long-sleeve something on, so I have a little more protection. Nobody wants to get envenomated. So had the snake moving around and striking at me as I'm positioning myself, and audiences oohing and aahing, and you can hear the audible gasps. So got the snake, big audience cheer, took the snake away from the crowd where nobody could see. That's not an animal you want to just go release. I guess some people might do that, but anything venomous, I'm not a fan of just doing a release on. I do like to remove the head.
Off with the head, so I was going to say.
Off with the head. Just so it's a non-danger. Now, a non-venomous snake, I will never do that with. That will absolutely get released in a safe place away from people and homes. But venomous snake, that's just one of my rules. And we make sure that it's dealt with at that point. You can still be envenomated by a headless snake up to 24 hours, so you still need to be cautious.
Envenomated? So that means poisoned?
It means envenomated. It means the fangs go into your skin, and it's getting shot directly into your bloodstream.
When it's dead.
Okay. When it's dead, up to 24 hours. So you got to be cautious. Even with a dead snake, you can still get envenomated. Which leads me to a quick little thing here. So the common thing I hear people saying is, oh my gosh, is that a poisonous snake? Is it not poisonous? It's never a poisonous or non-poisonous snake. Poison is something you ingest orally. Okay.
Venomous.
It's venomous or non-venomous because it is injecting directly into your bloodstream. So you can have venomous creatures. You can have poisonous creatures. Like we have poisonous toads. If you eat them, it can kill you. Your dog eats it, it can kill you. That's poisonous. Venomous is the correct term. So just,
okay. Just a little interesting thing. Okay.
Just a little.
No,
little
I didn't.
I love
no
to educate people. I love that.
Bit of knowledge. And everybody's going to seem way more intelligent.
Yeah.
So there's that.
Yeah.
I'm just going to move into some other
ones. What else you got?
So I will tell you that the first 6 months that I started doing this, which would have been back, late 2010, maybe somewhere in 2011.
You were pretty new.
Pretty new. Starting to figure things out pretty good. Didn't really have a firm grasp on everything yet. But I had gotten a phone call from a gentleman who I still know to this day. He's a great guy. And he said, listen, I'm not even going to describe what's happening right now, but can you get over to where I live? And I'm not going to say where that is, but it's a name people would recognize in a condo complex, or excuse me, a HOA in Fort Myers.
Okay.
I said, yeah, not a problem at all. He's like, I'm a home watch guy. I just do it as a favor to my neighbors who are out of town. And I said, we're having a major issue. So can you get here now? I'm like, yeah. So I get there, and he's like, okay, we're going to walk in, and you tell me what you think's happening. And the precursor was, I was here last week. I checked this once a week, and it was fine. There was nothing. So tell me what's happening. I'm like, okay. He opens the door to the house, and every bit of furniture in the house was destroyed. There was cushions and foam from the couch, from the love seat. The bedding material in the bedrooms was destroyed, and it smelled like urine, and I could see feces. So my first thought is, somehow rats got into the living space here, which, again, not a common thing for rats for the most part. They like to do attics. Don't really like the living space. This was different. The entire place was destroyed. I said, okay, well, they didn't start off with being in here because all the windows are closed and the doors are shut. And obviously, he's been maintaining, make sure everything was fine. So I said, let's go into the attic. Let's see what's going on there. Clearly, there's a starting point to this somewhere. We go into the attic, and the attic insulation is destroyed. There's feces and urine everywhere. The AC ducts, okay, the big ducts that run the air through the attic, they look like big aluminum foil tubes, are shredded, and that foil material is everywhere. There's no part of it that's not destroyed in some way. I wear a mask up in there just because of insulation, but I pulled the mask just to see what was, you know, smell it. I wanted to see what's going on, and it was even more horrific than inside. It was so concentrated. So what I was able to figure out, and then I inspected the outside, I figured out that rodents had gotten into the attic, but they had been doing the attic for a long time. It didn't just happen. The person apparently is a snowbird who's out of town 6 months at a time and hadn't been there in quite a while. But apparently when she was out of town for at least months at a time, something was going wild up in the attic and reproducing, aka rats. So the rats were doing their thing, and they had gotten to such a population up there because there was no portion of the attic where it wasn't ruined in some way. That the house wasn't burned down, which was slightly shocking because there were wires chewed, didn't get chewed all the way through, thank God, in some spots, but there was no part of the attic that wasn't ruined with feces, with urine, with insulation, with ductwork being destroyed. It was ridiculous.
Wow.
So realized that's what had happened. And so I thought, am I getting into the right business? I mean, this is the craziest thing I'd ever seen. And I'm thinking, okay, is this how it's going to be? Because I'm not, I don't know. But anyway, the nice part of the story was her insurance did pay for everything. Fortunately, not everybody's does. If it's an animal like that, they have riders that don't cover these things. But hers did. And I actually remediated her attic. I pulled all the attic material out of there, and we bagged it properly and disposed of it properly, disinfected everything, brought her whole new attic in, and attic was looking great. Inside, everything had to be thrown away, carpets included, and repainted, and basically all new furniture, all new everything.
Wow.
But that was an early on thing where I started to second guess, is this what I'm signing up for?
Well, how many rats?
Where I was going.
Yeah, how many rats were there?
The live ones?
We did. Captures on that. So we had to set traps. We never set traps inside a living space, but on rare occasions. We're in the dozens at that point. Just kept reproducing in the attic to where they chewed through the ductwork and they came through the vents, which I tell people there's almost no scenario that's even possible. This is one of the exceptions. It's really never happened since.
Well, what are they eating for months?
They were still having access to in and outside the house. So it was just a shelter, but they just had gotten so so many of a population that they need to spread out. Ugh. So they spread out to some guys stayed in the attic.
Like 50,
some guys
50 plus rats?
Maybe not quite that much, but several dozen.
My Lord.
So it was not quite ratatouille level, but
they're
pretty
like crawling all over you. And
so, yeah, enough to where it was pretty gross.
I won't be able to sleep tonight.
The person was dead set on selling after she had everything done, and I convinced her, once I have it all sealed for me outside, it'll never happen again. And it's never happened again. So, and
she didn't sell.
Literally, she never sold. Oh. She still owns it to this day. Huh. And I've been over to her place several times. The person that called me, that home watch person, he calls me on certain things. Huh. And I come check. Nothing's ever been like that.
Did you get photos of that kind of thing?
But You know, I didn't.
Wow.
And I should. Again,
that would have been amazing.
I was so horrified that I was just like, maybe I should go back to school and finish my doctorate.
I don't think I'm going to sleep very well. Wow.
So
I want to hear a different story.
These are exceptionally
weird
cases.
Don't tell my wife that one.
Okay. So we'll shift into a dangerous story.
Ooh.
Okay. So I got a phone call from... I get the phone call from on this. I guess this is also within a property manager. This is many, many years ago. And he said, I have got what I think is an extraordinarily large hive of bees on top of a 10-story condo building. And he said, I've hired numerous companies, but as soon as they come out here, they're not wanting to do it. I said, really? Okay. That's all the information. I rarely ever get more information from people. So I got out there, and apparently what was happening was the painters were there painting. This was one of several buildings, and they were painting, and they had very large crane equipment out there to get the guys up and down in the crane equipment, in the buckets, to be able to paint the outside of the building. And so apparently the other companies who had been there realized that once they got there, they were going up in the crane bucket. There were no steps getting you to this 10-story roof. Now, 10-story doesn't sound big when you're on a 10-story roof, and it's a flat roof, and there's no safety anything. There's nothing to clip onto. That's just a literal flat roof you could step off of if you want to. That's enough to freak people out. But these guys were quitting the job because they didn't want to get in the bucket and be raised up 10 stories. It's a little disconcerting. And, you know, I don't really have an issue with heights or anything like that. It was disconcerting for me, and I don't have any issue with these things. Getting in a bucket and going up, and there's a swarm up there when you have to have a bee suit on, which is big and bulky, and you have very limited peripheral vision, no way to hook any safety equipment in, is a little disconcerting. Again, I can't emphasize peripheral vision. You don't have it. You can only see what's right in front of you. You got to be careful, but you're also dealing with something that could kill you in these bees. So when people see someone in a bee suit, for the most part, they're beekeepers and they're working with their honeybees, totally different. When you're working with killer bees, they will swarm your suit and they'll sting you through your suit batting an eyelash.
That's the species we're talking about, killer bees.
Talking about
bees.
Killer bees, exactly. So the best way to describe them is if you put them side by side with a honeybee, they look the same. But the killer bee is wildly aggressive, whereas the honeybee is pretty docile for the most part. So the problem you have with the killer bees is when they find the weakness in your suit, which they will, because no suit is bulky everywhere. The way a suit works is you're going to get stung through the suit, but it's bulky enough it never reaches your skin, except in a couple spots. You don't have a choice. Wrists have to be snug. Mm-hmm. Ankles have to be snug. When they find it and they get you, it releases a pheromone. That's now the target. Now they're all coming for that spot.
Boy.
Then you start feeling like you've been lit on fire. So you don't want to be lit on fire, panicking on a 10-story roof with no safety equipment, and you can go run yourself right off of that because now you're face down dead.
Oh.
So it's just a very dangerous type thing. So again, running through the whole calculus on how I was going to do this job, there had to be a bucket operator to get me up. I couldn't do it myself, which is fine. He had no safety equipment or anything, so we ended up finding this rolled up bit of carpeting material. And I said, okay, that's going to be your safety gear. So when we get up there and you got me at the top, I'm going to make it as quick as I can, but you lay on the ground and you keep this over yourself so you're fully covered the best you can. He's like, okay, whatever you say, I'll do whatever. I'm like, okay. So you do that. My job is to get in and out of there as quickly as possible. The longer you stay with things like that, the better chance you have of getting really hurt or worse. Mm. You know, most people, if they're not allergic to something like that, you can become allergic to something like that quick. So you don't know what your body's going to react to. So you don't want to be stung. This is the whole goal. So the goal is get in, get out. So got me up there, covered himself up, and I just literally had a mental timer in my mind. I've got 15 seconds and I have to do this without falling off this roof. So got onto the roof and had a big battery powered blower, and I had a specialized dust in this blower for these guys. Found the center of the hive, blew it, and I knew they were coming for me. Like I said, timer in my head's going off, but again, you can't panic. You got to keep cool the entire time or you're not going to make it. I got to the bucket and I'm like, okay, get us down right now. And he's like, yeah, no problem. So, you know, we went up at a slow pace, and I never really thought about it that we were going to go down at a slow pace too. I'm thinking, it's going to go down pretty quick, right? No, we're like, it was probably going down at a pretty good pace, but I'm like, I'm ready to be down. And this thing, it just feels like we're in slow motion going down. I'm like, we're going to die.
Oh my Lord, literally
going to die. But no, he was able to get us far enough away from the everybody was concerned about the Queen, and they kind of stuck around that, but they came all the way out to the edge. As we're going down, you know, a story or two, we can see them coming out over the edge. So had we still been hanging out, you know, an extra 10 or 15 seconds on the side, we'd have been covered.
Yeah.
But he got us down. Nobody got stung. It worked out okay. But yeah, that was definitely one of those.
So how long after you did that dusting and got down were they all gone?
You won't see a full disappearance generally till the following day. Sometimes the next morning is about right. The populace, once they realize the Queen's gone, they start to dissipate too. If they've got the dust on them directly, they're going to die too. But things will start to break up, and you'll, by the next morning, you're pretty good. So without going back up the next day, just some binoculars on the ground was good. What I didn't realize was going on is we were attracting a massive crowd on the ground.
You always do.
Wow. Oh, to see what was going on. Guy in a bee suit up on the building. What's going to happen here? Well, everybody's got binoculars, cell phones, and crazy stuff.
Wow. Well, have you ever been bitten or seriously injured?
A few times with killer bees. I've never been scratched or bitten by any type of mammal or lizard like that. But nobody can do this type of thing and not get it with the bees. Yeah. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
Gotten stung right between the eyes once with a wasp. I wasn't even doing a wasp. It had nothing to do with wasp. We were doing something totally different. Wasp came out of nowhere, got me right between the eyes. But I'm on a 27-foot ladder at the time. Okay. You got to have the same reaction. If you panic, you're dead. You have to just take it. You just absorb it. Okay, I need to just get it. Because wasps can keep stinging you over and over. Oh, yeah. It's like electrocution. They're getting electrocuted.
Never had one there.
And,
but I've had one.
I knew I had about half an hour before my eyes swelled up. I mean, I had to get off. I was done for the day at that point. Got off. I got the stinger out and putting ice on my face. And it got down to my eyes, and they just about swelled shut. So, I mean, you're going to get it occasionally.
On the top of my hand, and the same thing. Just
blows right
water
up.
Hand.
Yeah,
wow.
It really blows up.
Every year, they put those nests up right at the corners of the garage where the garage door is.
Wow, your business insurance must be expensive, huh? Wow.
It's up there. Yeah. Even my insurance, they don't even know they don't classify me as what I do. I'm just still classified under pest. Like I'm an exterminator guy, which I'm not.
Like Dale Gribble.
Nothing to do with that. But yeah, so, well, speaking of that, if there are consistent areas where bees you see spring up or wasps, if you spray WD-40, in that space, it leaves it slippery. If you're slippery, they can't land. They can't build any type of nest. So it's a little tip for any spot where you're consistently, when you spray WD-40 all over your house. But if you're seeing it on certain soffits or certain eaves, just spray a little WD. Works great.
Awesome.
Easy stuff.
Interesting. Would you recommend this profession to others?
I would. You have to be pretty fearless, in my opinion. This is not ringing my own bell. If I were hiring somebody, which I'm not, I'd choose not to have employees. I would say that you have to go into it. You can have no fear of heights. Yeah. You can have no fear of being bitten by something. You can't have fears of going into attics. You're going to be in tight places. You have claustrophobia. You're not going to make it. You have to be able to get yourself into situations and be able to think your way out. So I'd recommend it for the right person, the right mindset. Yeah. And that's guy or gal. There's gals in my field who are probably better than I am. So that part doesn't matter. Yeah. It's the right mindset. I think you got to have a certain physicality to you. You're pulling yourself up. You're pushing yourself. You have to have some type of fitness level
and stamina.
You gotta have stamina.
You're in a hot attic sometimes in August, right?
You're in a hot attic. You have to have a timer in your head for stuff like that. Especially in our area, of the country, these attics get to be insanely hot. Mm-hmm. You can throw a thermostat in an attic in 130 degrees. You have to have a timer of how long you can stay. You will pass out. There's nobody that won't. So there's factors for it. But yeah, I would say that, it's for some people. It's not for most. It's not for the faint of heart.
Yeah.
You're going to see some horrible things. You see some amazing things. You're going to be able to fix problems that other people just can't do. And there's a lot of satisfaction with that.
What are the biggest and smallest animals you've ever trapped?
Smallest. Biggest, you know, we've gotten a few of the bigger lizards. We've gotten that. It's a good question, though. Small ones, I've had people that just absolutely beg me not to set up snap traps for rodents, and I will set up a live trap. Done that.
Do people call you for mice? I got a mouse in my house.
They will say that initially, but it almost is never a mouse. It's, no. It's always a rat. And again, we're back to Bergman's rule of when people see something small of a species that they've seen up north, like a rat, when they see a rat up north, they have a certain size in mind. When they see a rat down here, they're thinking, there's no way a rat's that small. It's got to be a mouse. It's a rat in almost every case. So there's that part.
Yeah.
Get time for any more?
Yeah, please tell me another story or two.
Okay, all right. So we'll do some quicker ones here. All right. So woodpeckers. Woodpeckers are very interesting down here, and we'll get into more of the species later. Mm-hmm. But two main species that we deal with, and they can do damage on homes where you've got decorative foam. Okay, and decorative foam is usually trim work or corbels that you'll see on certain styles of home where it looks like stone, but it's not. It's actually styrofoam. But it's textured just like stucco would be or concrete, and it looks strong, but it's not. Once the male woodpecker, who's always on the prowl for a female woodpecker to mate with, when they find any material, they try to peck it first. The pecking noise of the male woodpecker is going to attract a female. That's why you're hearing the pecking all the time. That noise attracts. But what they're concurrently trying to do is open a hole at the same time that they can have a nest in if he does successfully attract a female. So they can peck a tree. Very hard to peck a hole in a tree, for the most part. It could peck concrete, you know, or stucco on a house. It'll make a lot of noise. You're not going to open anything. But when they find the styrofoam trim, it will give them the noise they want, and it'll give them an opening. Okay, so it'll turn into exactly what they're looking for. So you'll see on the homes where you'll go out and there'll be holes all over the place because they've landed and they've pecked. So anyway, we've got a great technique for taking care of those guys. We use a clear repelling gel that we like to put on things. And woodpeckers, you know, when I'm doing something like that, we repair the hole first and then we put our gel on afterwards so that they can't come repeck it. Otherwise, it didn't serve any purpose and defeated the whole point. So woodpeckers a lot of times will be in the trees as a staging point, kind of waiting for me to be done so they can get back to their work. The house will be done, and they'll go land back on it again. And as soon as they land in our repelling gel, that's it. They start to look around in a very panicked, with a very panicked look, and then they fly off, and that's the last we see of them. It's just something they don't like. So we have that a lot. They'll just
push them out. You don't capture and release them.
Don't capture and release. Yeah, that's another one where it's a repel only. You got to find the best techniques for repelling.
Yeah.
If you go off of the internet, you'll see all kinds of techniques for woodpeckers. Dangle shiny streamers. Put an owl up with a bobbing head. Hang CDs so that it reflects the light. None of those things work long term. We've seen stuff like that work for maybe a day or two, maybe. Usually doesn't even last that long. But they realize that it's a non-threat and they just get back to their work. The repelling gel is totally different. It's something that it's a material they do not like to land in. Okay, it's something that can have an adverse effect on if that gets on them, on their wings, they can't fly, and they know if they can't fly, they're dead. The ground predators will get them, so it works really good. So we have lots of fun with the woodpeckers that we like to video that after we do it when they try to land back on it again and they look around and then they fly off. Last we ever see of those.
Wow.
Anyway, so I had a very interesting phone call once with a lady who's like, my motion detector light keeps going off and I don't know what it is. I think it's a raccoon. And she had been a previous client of mine with something else, and she said, would you mind setting a trap up? I said, yeah, not a problem. I'm like, how often is it setting off your light? She's like, I don't know, like 3 or 4 times a night. I'm like, okay, well, let's do it. Was a late phone call anyway. I'm like, well, when it does it tonight, take a photo, send it over to me, let me just see what it is. I'm thinking it could be anything. She sends me over a photo, and she's like, she was an older lady, really sweet, and she's like, yeah, definitely a raccoon. Well, when I saw the photo, it was a Florida panther. It was not a raccoon.
Oh my gosh.
I'm like, I'm looking at this, and I was eating dinner with my wife. I'm like, April, what does this look like? I didn't say anything. What does that look like to you? She's like, Florida panther. I'm like, yep, Florida panther.
Wow.
It's a Florida panther in her backyard. And wow. It's just hanging out doing stuff every night. I'm like, so I call her back. I'm like, okay, not a raccoon. Can't set a trap up. Those are protected Florida panthers. She's like, really? It's a Florida panther? I'm like, yes. She's like, oh, okay. Well, okay. I know why it's happening. I've been feeding the dog in the back. I've been putting the food out. And I'm like, well, does he finish? She's like, she didn't always finish it so it can there sit it out is. Overnight. It was a track. And I'm like, okay, you can feed the dog totally fine, but whatever he doesn't eat, just bring it back in for the night. Nothing gets left out at night for the nocturnal animals. And she did that, and that was the last of it. So, but very odd. I mean, wow. You rarely get to see a Florida panther, let alone in someone's backyard.
That's
super,
crazy.
Super, super rare.
It was in which city?
That would have been Fort Myers.
Fort
Myers, too.
Wow.
Yeah, we have a lot of
I know they're out by Gateway in that area sometimes.
Yeah, but a lot more things out that way for the most part. Got a lot more habitat area out there.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so that was an odd one. That was one that hasn't been reproduced since.
Do you have one more story before we wrap things up, Patrick?
I do. Okay, so this is a warning story here.
Uh-oh.
Okay, so I got a phone call from a mini storage. I'm going to be very broad with this. somewhere in our area. Mm-hmm. And they said that we had a raccoon attack one of the customers here that leaves something in storage. I don't want to say exactly. Well, I guess I have to say what it is. He leaves his boat in storage.
All right.
And he would leave his boat covered. And he would come once every couple of weeks. And he would just check on it, make sure everything's good. Goes out to check it that particular day, noticed that his cover was pulled back. And so as the story went, and they actually had the security camera there to also go back over this, he noticed that there was a raccoon in there with juveniles. So he said, oh, well, I'm just going to take care of that myself. So he goes back to the office and doesn't tell him what's going on, just says, hey, you guys have a broom. So his idea was, I'm just going to just shoo him out of there, just swat him out, you know, no big deal. I'll just swat him out. And so he gets the broom, again, doesn't say a thing, and goes back to his boat. And, you know, he has to climb up onto his boat. And now he's pulling back, you know, the rest of the cover. And he's going to, the way it looked to me on the video is he was taking a backswing, like he's going to smack this thing out of there. Well, their reactions are grease lightning. Okay. So when he went for his backswing, it lunged directly for him. And he's not dressed for something like this. He's got shorts and flip-flops on. So let's just say,
yeah,
he got it right where his foot meets his shin, and it wasn't pretty. So the unfortunate phone call I got was that raccoon's still here. It was slightly off property in a tree with the juveniles. Now we got a major issue. Now we have a raccoon that's now attacked a person. Now what do you do with that?
Bad raccoon.
Right? So now you have to do something with that. Exactly. So that was a really terrible decision he made, and he paid the price for it. I'm sure that was emergency surgery, and you don't know what you're dealing with, so you're automatically getting rabies shots.
Yeah.
And let's just say the raccoon juveniles had to go to Crow, and it was a whole big mess that was easily avoidable. So the moral of that one is, if you see wildlife, don't just try to deal with it yourself unless it's something very minor and extraordinarily safe. Call a professional on that, or at least inform somebody of what's going on. Don't try to take something that has the ability to hurt you like that. You know, something that's got teeth and claws and can do some damage.
Boy.
Don't take that into your own hands. It's not that simple.
You have seen it all, it sounds like.
Seen a couple things.
Wow. All right, Patrick. Hey, thanks so much again for stopping by the studio. Our guest has been Patrick Gibson. He is a professional wildlife remover here in Southwest Florida, and he's seen it all, and we do enjoy hearing these stories.
Hey, Jim.
Yeah, Jerry.
I've got a request.
Ask me anything.
Can we ask Patrick back for one more episode?
Let me think. Okay, yes.
All right.
Patrick has graciously already agreed, Jerry.
Oh.
He's going to, in our next show
awesome.
That features Patrick, he's going to give us his list of Florida's most unwanted critters and pests. So we're going to hear about that. Hey, Patrick, I know you've got a website. What's the name of the website, the address?
Yes, the address is name of our company. It's professionalwildliferemoval.com. Got a little more information about all the different animals that we do. Some good tips on there for things to look for.
Yeah.
Easy to get a hold of us. And yeah, professionalwildliferemoval.com.
Very cool. Very cool. Hey, I want to thank everybody here at the association, especially our CEO, Beata Jones. I want to thank you, Jerry Johnson.
Oh, me? Oh, thanks, Jim. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I want to thank you, most importantly, our listener, for finding us on your podcast app or other device. So thanks for being there, and we will look forward to seeing you again next time. But I want to make sure that if you want to get in touch with us, you know how to do that. That is via email. That's the best way. You can send us an email to shows@rpcra.org. That's shows@rpcra.org. Let us know what you'd like to hear about regarding home ownership, and we'll try to get to it. So thanks again for listening, everyone. We'll look forward to seeing you again next time.
Thanks for listening to the Royal Palmcast. Be sure to listen again each week. Share and subscribe on your favorite podcast app or YouTube. And be sure to check out our sister podcast, Realtor Riff Rap, and our video news show, Realtor's Corner, which can be found on the Royal Palm Coast Realtor Association Facebook page and YouTube channel. For information about sponsorship opportunities for this and other RPCRA productions, email us at shows@rpcra.org. This has been a production of the Royal Palm Coast Realtor Association.